Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are in chapter 30 of Prema Vahini. This is the last chapter. And this is a long chapter. We are actually today in the 10th segment of this chapter. And if you have been following these discussions that we have been having in the last 10 weeks, you would get a feeling that Swami is so beautifully summarizing everything that he had written in the previous 29 chapters. And if we pay our attention and concentrate just on this chapter alone, perhaps we will get the essence of Prema Vahini. So with prayers to Bhagwan, let's begin the session. I'm Team Lodaya Sai S. Bishu, and as always, along with me, Sai Prakash. So we will listen to the 10th segment of chapter 30 and then pray for his guidance.
ప్రపంచమున ప్రజాసేవా తత్పరులైన వైద్యులు అచ్చటచ్చట వైద్యాలయముల ఏర్పరచి జనులకు ఏ విధంగా రోగములు నివారణ చేయుచుందురో అదేవిధంగా భవరోగ వైద్యులకు మహాత్ముల పుణ్యాశ్రమములు అచ్చటచ్చట ఉండినచో జనులు అజ్ఞాన అసత్య అనాచార అహంకారములను రోగములకు గురికాకుందురు కదా. ఆ విధంగానే బ్రహ్మజ్ఞానోషధమున్ను శాంత శమదమాది సత్యగుణములెనడు పథ్యమును కలిగియుండిన ఈ అజ్ఞాన ప్రవర్తన రోగము నాశనమగును. అట్లుకాక ఇప్పటి మహనీయుల చెంతచేరు రోగులకు ఇష్టముచ్చినట్లు మందులిచ్చుచూ వారికి ఇష్టమైన వస్తువులను ఆరగించు పథ్యము పెట్టుచూ వారి చేతులలో బానిసలై అట్లుకాకున్నా తమకు పేరు ప్రతిష్టలు రావని తలంచి రోగులకు వశమైన డాక్టర్లు కావటం వలన ఈనాడు ఈ బాధలకు గురి కావలసి వచ్చినది. ఎక్కడైనను రోగి యొక్క రోగమును తెలుసుకుని ఆ రోగమును నయము చేసి వాని ఆనందమునకు ప్రేమకు కృతజ్ఞతకు అర్హుడు కావలెను. కాని తన వర్ణనలకు తన పోషణకు తాను ప్రాకులాడి రోగిని ఇష్టము వచ్చినట్లు పోనిచ్చి నాశనము చేయుట వల్ల తన పని మాత్రం ఎంతకాలం నడవగలదు? ఇప్పటి వాతావరణం ఈ రీతిగానే నడుచుచున్నది. ఆధ్యాత్మిక పెద్దలైననేమి, అధికారమునందున్న పెద్దలైననేమి, పెద్దలందరూ ఈ బుద్ధులలోనే నడుచుచున్నారు. వీరి ప్రవర్తనలు సరిచేసుకున్నప్పుడే లోకమునకు మంచి కలుగును. కాని ఆడంబరములతో ఎన్ని ప్రచారములు ప్రసంగములు జరిపినను ప్రయోజనము లేదు. కార్యరూపమున చూపవలెను. డాక్టర్లు రోగుల సేవ నిమిత్తమై ఏర్పడిన వారలే కాని తమను తాము కోసుకొనుటకు గుచ్చుకొనుటకు కాదు. అట్లనే మహాత్ములకు జ్ఞానులు అజ్ఞాన నిద్రలో నిద్రించువారిని అహంకారపు సుడిగుండంలో మునిగిపోవువారిని తరింపచేయువారే కాని అజ్ఞానంతో సర్వ వ్యామోహబద్ధులై సత్యమునే మరచి అధికారం పేరు ప్రఖ్యాతులకై శరీర భోగములకై ప్రాకులాడువారికి ఇంకనూ ఆశలు కలిగించి వారలను వ్యామోహములందు మరింత లోతులకు త్రోసి భ్రష్టులను చేయుటకు కాదు. నేను పెద్ద నీవు చిన్న అనుచు లేనిపోని ద్వేషములను రెచ్చగొట్టుచు లేని అశాంతికి అజ్ఞానమునకు దారిచూపుటకు కాదు. పెద్దతనము భేదములను అణగద్రొక్కి సర్వజన సమాన ప్రేమకు పునాది వేయుట పెద్ద. కాని అట్లు కానివాడు పెడ్డ అంటే మట్టి ముద్ద.
జస్ట్ యాజ్ ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ టుడే వి డు సీ సమ్ కైండ్ హార్టెడ్ డాక్టర్స్ రన్నింగ్ మెడికల్ ఇన్స్టిట్యూషన్స్ టు సర్వ్ ద డిజీజ్డ్ and cure the afflicted. In the same manner, if we would have had spiritual centers set up by holy personages in different places who are experts in treating the maladies of the worldly life, then we would have not had diseases like ignorance, untruth, immorality and ego. Likewise, the infection of ignorance can be cured only by the medicine of Brahmajnana with supplementary doses of the drugs like Shantam, Shama, Dama and Satya. They are peacefulness, fortitude, self-control and truth. The so-called great men of today give those who approach them the medicines they demand and compromise with dietary restrictions, succumbing to the wishes of the patients. Thus, in the process, the doctors dance to the tunes of the patients and for the sake of name and fame, even becomes their slaves. This is the reason for the current sorry state of affairs. Ideally, the doctor should diagnose the ailment of the patient correctly and cure the malady and thus be the recipient of gratitude, love and joy expressed by the beneficiary. On the other hand, if the doctor's focus is on his selfish ends and the income to be earned, resulting in the actual deterioration and, in fact, destruction of the patient's health, then how long can such doctors sustain? The current circumstances are of this nature. Even if there are spiritual leaders and men in authority, they too conduct in the same manner. Only when they correct their conduct will there be welfare in the world. There is no use of any number of public talks and promotions which are only for self-aggrandizement. One must demonstrate the ideals in action. The purpose of doctors is only to serve the patients and not work for themselves. Similarly, the task of holy men is to awaken those who are mired in the slumber of ignorance and in the whirlpool of ego. They should not lead into perdition those who are already entrapped by desires due to ignorance and forgetful of the truth, are after power, name, fame and worldly enjoyments. They should not highlight the differences among people and contribute to hatred in society, leading to more unrest and ignorance. Greatness lies in diffusing the differences and laying the foundation for universal love. Those who do not do this are not the salt of the earth. They are in fact like mud.
So those are Bhagwan's words. And as we hear Bhagwan giving the analogy of the current medical practitioners, and then Bhagwan then relating that to spiritual doctors.
Exactly.
In fact, Saprakash just reminded of a little incident that happened right here in the studio just a few days ago. So one morning, I just came into the office and there is this boy, young chap. He's come with a tabla in his hand. And from his looks, I could make out that, you know, definitely he didn't come from a very well-groomed background. Definitely he looked someone from very economically disadvantaged section of society. And so I asked him, what can I do for you? And he said, I want to donate this tabla.
Oh.
And I said, why do you want to donate this tabla? And he said, no, Swami has done so much for me. I don't know what I can do. I want to give this tabla. And since he was speaking Odia and I knew the language, so I asked him, what happened? Because, you know, when I looked at him, I felt I should do something for him and he wants to donate something. Obviously, you're not comfortable accepting anything. So then he said that when he was very small, I mean, his father did not have means for him to study. And his father comes from a very remote part of Odisha. And in that part of Odisha, all the people, they largely go to Surat for working as daily laborers. Okay. So there is a lot of, Surat is of course known for diamond industry as well as for textile industry. So his father used to work there as a weaver in one of those factories. And so that was sort of the route that most of the men of that village had taken. So once he was into school, and I think he studied just for a few years in the school, and the family needed money, and his father and parents said, "You also better you start working." And so he also went to Surat, and he started working there. And the employer there was extracting a lot of work out of all these people, and their living conditions were not so good. Mm-hmm. And in the process, he fell ill. And it was a very terrible illness, something to do with the brain fever or something like that. And so he just could not manage to be there and work, nobody to look after him. And the employer also did not do anything out of the way to help and seek a cure for this guy's treatment. So he came back to the village. And with a lot of rest and, you know, some home remedies, and somehow he sort of stabilized his condition. And he went back, and again he worked, and again he fell sick, so he came back again. And during one of these trips when he was in the village, mm-hmm. one day he was going on a motorbike. Someone wanted some help, so he was going on the two-wheeler, and unfortunately they had a terrible accident. Oh. And because of that, his one leg was completely damaged.
My God.
And so in the village, they tried to seek some cure. Obviously, there's nothing much there. So they went to the near, they went to Cuttack, I think, the nearby town. And so there in the Cuttack Medical College, they tried to see what can be done. And the doctors there said it'll cost this much. And they tried to do something. Some surgeries were done. And unfortunately, the whole thing resulted in the condition becoming worse.
Okay.
And so it got infected and everything. And so it came to a point where the pain was so much that he was unable to do anything. And finally, he said, maybe I have to go somewhere else. So some friends brought him to Vishakhapatnam.
Okay.
And one sad thing that happened during this time also, you know, given their really poor economical conditions, the family also sort of distanced themselves from him, because until now he was an asset for the family.
Mm.
Now he became a liability for the family.
My God.
So now he's not able to earn, he's not able to do anything. He's become a burden on the family. So nobody to look after him. I mean, even his own sort of parents also did not want to do anything much, because so there were only two, three, because he was a good fellow. He was a very kind-hearted guy who should always be there to help. So there were two, three people who wanted to help him. So they brought him to Vishakhapatnam. There the doctors saw everything, and they said that, you know, the leg has to be amputated. That is one of the ways, options that are available. And so this boy was, he had reconciled to the view, because the pain was so much that he said, it doesn't matter, you know, if I lose the leg, but I can't bear this pain. And just at that moment, one friend says that, you know, I just heard that in Bangalore there is one hospital, it's free hospital,
mm-hmm.
and they do all these surgeries, and let's go there. And he said, no, I have had enough, because actually I didn't give you the entire history. He had like a terrible time going from running from pillar to post, trying to get a cure, and two, three hospitals messed up his case actually. And the whole thing had become so pathetic. And now he just wanted to be relieved of the pain. So he said, doesn't matter, just cut the leg. But this friend, he said, just one more chance. We'll go to Bangalore, you know, if we cannot do anything, then, you know, we'll just do this. And so they take the train, and when they are going Bangalore, on the route, someone in the train says, where are you going? And they say, we are going to this hospital. They say, it's a free hospital, and our problem will be cured. They said, no, you don't go there. You go to Puttaparthi. Orthopedic is in Puttaparthi. Don't go to Bangalore.
Mm-hmm.
So they stop at Puttaparthi station, and they get down.
Got down. Oh.
They got down here.
Mm.
And they come to Swami's hospital. And so there, when they go to the orthopedics department, the doctor here sees this boy and says that, see, we can cure you.
Mm.
Your leg need not be amputated.
Mm.
But only thing is, it will take time. We have to do a series of surgeries, because a lot of wrongs also has been done. We have to correct all that. So it will take 6 months.
My God.
We have to do slowly.
Mm.
We have to do many operations.
Mm.
See the progress, and then, you know, slowly restore that leg. So, if you're ready for it, if you have an attendant to be with you, we'll take up your case.
Mm.
And so the person who had brought him, so he said, I'll be there for some time, but you know, because they all are people who are somehow struggling to make their ends meet. So he stayed for some time and then he went back and he convinced his mother to come. So his mother came and stayed for some time. So that's how somehow 2-3 friends and mother, they took turns. 6 months he stayed here.
My God.
And he was operated. Mm. And at the end of 6 months, he could walk. Oof. He could walk normally.
Amazing.
Only thing is, there was a bit of a limp because some damage that had been done could not be corrected. So, he got back his leg. The only thing he cannot do now is, you know, he cannot fold that leg, one leg. But otherwise, he can walk and, you know, he's normal, he's fit. And so, after that had happened, you know, he... of course, there are so many instances where he felt Swami's presence and all that. And then he came to the ashram, and when seeing the ashram and he feeling so grateful for, you know, for this hospital, for Bhagwan, he wanted to serve Swami. And so after that he started coming for seva as part of Orissa or as part of any sevadal, you know, any sevadal, state sevadal is there. He just want to join and he just want to seva because he is unable to understand how can I express my gratitude to this Lord.
So sweet.
Who gave back my life at a time when my family also disowned me. So he's so much filled with gratitude. One thing that had happened was, you know, during when all this was happening at his village, he realized that, you know, there's no way he's able to earn and he has to earn some way, you know, to look after his basic needs. So, and because he loved music, you know, in the villages, when they have these functions, they used to hire these music troupes who will come and sing some devotional songs and they would charge so much money. So he thought, you know, why are we asking all these people to come and perform and they ask so much money? Why don't we do it ourselves? So not that he was a musician, but he just had that interest and passion. So he just, you know, listening to music on his phone, he was trying to pick up tabla. He was thinking, if I somehow pick up tabla, then, you know, he could sing also a little bit. So he'll try to form a band and, you know, they can do this thing in the villages and in the nearby villages. You know, that is what he's, because he felt that he doesn't have now the energy to do the hard work that he was doing in Surat. So this he thought he can probably manage. So that is the reason why somehow he had purchased this tabla to learn tabla and form his music band. And now after he got cured, and now he was doing seva in the ashram and now that whole dream had gone, you know, now he's only thinking, what can I do for Swami? And so he went back to the village and he saw this tabla and he felt, there is nothing that I can do for Swami. At least I will donate this tabla. At least, you know, if someone in the mandir plays this tabla or anyone, you know, associated with Prashantalam, if they use this tabla, that will be my gratitude to Swami.
And
when I heard the story, of course, you know, you can't not be full of tears. I mean, even you look at that kind of passion to serve, that kind of passion to express gratitude. And in fact, he's even now, as I'm speaking, he's here in Prashantalam, he's serving. He was with the earlier Sevadals and now also he has joined the current group of Sevadals and he just wants to serve. Just wants to be in the ashram and serve.
Very moving. See, the context in which Swami used the analogy of the doctors and the hospitals is also very, very different. And I've never heard this.
Yes.
It's a very unique way of presenting. He says, just as you have centers of healing in the medical field.
Yes.
You have centers where you can go and get cured and you have these institutions. We should have institutions where the holy principles are taught.
Yes.
The holy principles are taught and it's not compromised. It's taught in the way it should be taught.
The reason why I remember this is, here he found an institution where his health was not being compromised.
Exactly.
Where the doctors were not doing things for their selfish ends, but the doctors were looking at what best can be done for the patient. Even though all the hospitals still had told him that we have to cut your leg, here was the hospital which told him, no, we can keep your leg. You just be with us for some time. Give us time and we'll keep your leg. I mean, in that context, I just remembered this.
Absolutely. See, the the underlying perspective of this whole analogy which Swami has used is that doctors are catering. They're giving the patients the kind of medicines they want.
Yes.
So, when you are in pain, you say, okay, if I go to this doctor who will not give me such a bitter medicine.
Exactly.
Yes. This person gives me a very bitter medicine. So, when you start playing to the gallery, as they call it, and the doctor is really not concerned about the cure of the patient and is more interested in kind of trying to please him and trying to get
so name the patient actually becomes a customer, you're not there to serve, help, think of the best interest of the patient. You're just like a customer. You go to a shop and they want to somehow sell and do whatever pleases the customer.
See, also Swami mentions about the name and fame.
Yes.
See, people, they go in for these kind of things because they want to quickly get name and fame.
Correct.
And they want to, in fact, talking about this this thing, there was a discussion with Dr. John Hislop, in which Dr. John Hislop asked Swami, why the governments are not coming and falling at your feet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The government, they know who you are. Means, don't they know who you are? Why the entire government is not coming to you, falling at your feet and taking your advice on how the country should be run? And Swami said, they know who I am. The government very well knows who Swami is. But they don't want to come here and bow to me, and neither do I want that.
I also don't want
that. I also don't want that. Because the moment they realize that Swami is who he is, Bhagwan has come here, they will make me part of the government and they will be put me in one of their wings and they will give me with high security, they will put all the people. Then how will I meet the devotees?
Oh my God.
He says, how will I meet the devotees? See, the analogy that he has used here about the doctors trying to do things for the selfish reasons versus doing a selfless act, which is what is needed. See, the same thing if you extrapolate to what Swami is saying here. Swami could have had the best of facilities. He could have had the greatest security. He would have had the best of, amenities, and he could have lived like a king and the emperor, even on the physical plane, I'm saying. But all he had was a 10x10 room. And absolutely no, if you go up to Swami's room here in the mandir, you are bound to cry. Because, in that room built with stone, and in the summer, how hot it must have got.
Yes.
Such a simple life, always doing what is good for others, not doing what is good for himself. So there's another beautiful thing in that same thing. He says, Swami says, if the government takes Swami, they'll put me and I won't be able to actually meet the devotees. Then he says, that is Swami's wish. And then he says, what is there for me? With one move of my hand, Swami could have the entire world acknowledge him. With one move of my hand, I can have the entire world recognize who I am, acknowledge me. But what purpose is that? Does that serve? To what end? He says, it would be spectacular only and would not accomplish anything of value. He says, yes, there is spectacular. There is, the whole world, Baba, Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba, Swami, this, that. But is it, he says, it will not accomplish anything of value. The transformation that has to come, comes only when there is an individual approach. There is an approach. Why should he sit and, call so many people for interview, talk to them about their problems? He could have just given discourses and said, you are not the body, you are not the senses, you are not the mind, you are the Atma. Okay, that's it, over, come back tomorrow, I'll give another discourse. He could have done that. But how many interviews, how many people, and, same problems again and again and again and again, how much he has. So, when you look at this analogy, with so much of compassion, he is giving what needs to be done. Although it is most painstaking.
Yes.
It's most difficult. The kind of routine that Swami led in his life is so meticulous and so severe actually.
Yes.
This very severe routine. Every day, morning, evening, darshan, interviews, and again and again and again and again, day after day, day after day. It's really amazing.
I think, you know, as Bhagwan is saying here, Swami was doing that to rid of the infection of ignorance. As Swami exactly. says, the infection of ignorance can be cured only by the medicine of Brahmajnana.
Right.
With supplementary dosages of the drugs like Shantam, Sama, Dama, Satya. These are the qualities that Swami was trying to inculcate in everyone.
Mm.
Peace, fortitude, self-control, truth. So that the infection of ignorance that is there in us can be cured. In fact, that reminds me of one instance, interaction with Swami again, which happened many years ago. So, while speaking to these devotees of yesteryears, Swami once told them, see, you are very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You will not get this chance again. Years later, all these opportunities will become difficult.
Okay.
And this happened sometime in the 50s.
My God.
And Swami used to, of course, you know, shower a lot of attention. The people were few, but, you know, they used to get so much of Bhagwan's attention. And we know in 50s, the students were not there, hospitals were not there, nothing was there. So whoever was there, they were Bhagwan's only sort of project.
Exactly.
So, however, you know, after a few years of such proximity, Bhagwan one day said, see, old devotees, now you must withdraw and you should sit behind.
Oh.
You must give place to the newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, many people didn't take that seriously and they would still come and sit in the front. They would yearn to get that chance and yearn for those interviews and all that. And given their early and that long association with Swami, you know, Swami also would often oblige. And what would happen is once they get this chance to be with Swami, then they would start asking. You know, in those days, Swami, whatever people had problems, you know, Swami would be very condescending and, you know, finding solutions to all their physical, social, personal problems. So once they get the chance, then they would start their, you know, series of requests. So one day, looking at such a group, Bhagwan said, see, you're always asking for something or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this. Swami said, if, let's say, you ask for a necklace, or you ask for a bangle, or you ask for something material, you know what you're doing? That is only a piecemeal prayer.
Oh, okay.
You have to make your prayer total.
Mm.
Don't say that this one is troubling me, or I want money to buy that thing, and so on. You should do total prayer, and total prayer is to ask for Paramashanti.
Okay.
Supreme peace. Peace that is undisturbed by anything external. Swami said, this is what you should ask for, and you ask for it and I'll give it to you. And then he said, you won't know how I will give it to you. You will have no idea how I will give it to you. I know the way it will reach you. You just leave it to me, but make your prayer that, Lord, give me Paramashanti. And then Swami said, if you say that I want nothing else but only permanent peace, that is surrender. And on another occasion when this devotee to whom Bhagwan said this, you know, he was reading the Bhagavad Gita and Swami said, see, because you're devoted to me and you're doing your prayers and sadhana, I will grant you whatever you want in this world. Whatever you want in this world, I will grant you, but you cannot get me. You will get everything in the world, but not God. And God is peace. God is truth. God is righteousness. God is peace. God is love. I am love. I am peace. I am compassion. But you will not get this in the world. If you're doing your prayers and everything, you know, whatever you want, I'll grant you. However, if you ask for money, position, prayer, I will give it to you. But with this, what will happen is, you will only become more peaceless. Because the more you have all these things, more you'll be distanced from permanent peace. You'll actually have more problems. That is why I'm telling you, don't ask for them. If you're wise, you ask for the gold. And what is gold? Peace is gold.
Beautiful. Said,
if you have that, then you can make, once you have that gold, you can make anything out of it. All the other jewels you can make out of that gold. Ask for pure gold. And then someone said, that is what I have come to give you all, the gift of supreme peace. And in fact, Swami also mentioned that how in the Dwapara Yuga, Arjuna asks Krishna, Lord, what will I get if I obey you? Arjuna asks Krishna, and Krishna says, I will give you supreme peace, where nothing will affect you, be it gain or loss, praise or blame, victory or defeat, everything will be same for you. All the pairs of opposites will become one for you. You will transcend that. So I just remember this because, you know, when here Bhagavan is saying that he has come to cure us of this infection of ignorance, and he is doing it through these drugs of peace, fortitude,
right,
self-control and truth.
Hmm.
And that is what the great men of today should be doing.
Should be doing. Exactly. He says the task of the holy men is to awaken people from the slumber of ignorance.
Yes.
And who are caught up in this whirlpool of ego. And then he says, greatness lies in diffusing the differences and laying the foundation for universal love.
Yes.
And those who do not do this are not the salt of the earth. They are in fact like mud.
Mm.
That is a kind of a strong statement.
Yes.
Because what happens is, to do something, to quote unquote make an impact in a very short time, or use the easy tricks of marketing,
yes,
quote unquote marketing. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, it's very easy to get popular. It's very easy to do something very, large, and people come to know, especially in today's day and age of communication.
Yes.
Again, going back to the 80s, early 1980s, when in this conversation with Dr. John Hislop. So he says, Swami, there is so much of unrest. There is so much of, chaos, unrest, adharma happening. And Swami says, the communication, the fast communication is also adding to the cause
adding
of this.
Adding to the thing.
He says it's adding to the cost of this. And in fact, he goes one step further and he says, look at your American elections. It's all being affected because of this communication. This is in the 80s, early 80s. what today with this internet age. So then he says, Swami, communication has its own advantages.
Yes.
But something like the atom bomb, for example. The knowledge of making an atom bomb, because of the prevalence of communication, maybe it could spread.
Yes.
And that can cause a lot of confusion and chaos and unrest in the world.
Fear, yes.
Fear and unrest in the world. Then Swami says, nothing, it will not cause anything. He is surprised. He says, Swami, atom bomb. Swami says, see, people have gone to such a level that they don't mind dying. As long as they can make money. See, all your marketing, all your, instant results, all your these things are all instant money. Basically, it's for money. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, but you're doing something which kind of is a temporary fix.
Yes.
So he says people are ready to die also as long as they can make money. They are not scared of the atom bomb, but atom bomb is not the cause for the problem. The cause for the problem is man's mind.
Yes.
He says the mind has to be changed. It's not the bomb that has to be changed.
Correct.
That same science which you have used for creating the atom bomb, you can use for something else, something more productive. And then he says, Swami, you have come. And still the mindset is like this. What is going to happen? Then Swami gives this beautiful statement. He says, the world is safe today because a large number of people are following Swami. And he says, the collective group of people who have their minds and hearts in the right direction, like he says, the good people, the duty that they are supposed to do is spread these, good values and preach universal love.
Yes.
You should not be dividing the society with bombs and wars and, try to create divisions.
Yes.
But you should talk about love, we should preach love, we should live love. So Swami says, if it was not for the mind change of the Sai devotees, the world would have already fallen into complete chaos.
Wow.
I felt that is such a empowering statement.
Absolutely.
And also a kind of a responsibility on the shoulders of all Sai
yes.
devotees.
Yes.
And he's, Dr. John Hinchcliffe asked Swami, Swami, how? Like the Sai centers abroad, there are only two people coming, three people coming. Can we call more people? Can we put up a notice board? Mm-hmm. Swami says, no. Any kind of board, any kind of pamphlet you print out and put, that is advertisement. I don't need advertisement.
Hmm.
Only by the way the devotees lead their lives, that has to inspire others to come and join the center. They have to see the lives of the devotees. They have to get inspired by word of mouth. They have to know and then they have to come.
It's a slow process.
It is
a
very, very slow process. And he says, Swami, but sometimes the crowd never grows. Let them not grow. Only two people in Samiti. Let them be there.
Wow.
So the way Swami has built the whole thing, because, you know, at the end, in one sentence, if you were to look at what the analogy of the doctors, etc., what Swami is saying, it's means versus ends. See, ultimately, it's means versus ends. The doctor is trying to please the patient by giving what the patient wants. In a wrong way, he's yes. trying to please the patient.
Yes.
But the doctor who gives a bitter pill is actually doing good for the patient.
Yes.
So this person is concentrating on the means, on the ends, that is to please the patient. But this person is concentrating on the means. The means should be good for the patient. It's not... You know, it's not something which the patient may like or it may not be something palatable at that
yes.
point in time. But that is what is good for the patient.
Hmm.
So in the same way, the way Swami has
yes.
Set up the Sai organization, the way Swami has done everything regarding the university, the institutions, the Sai organization, every institution what Swami has set up, he has used the slow and the sure and the right way.
Yes.
It may not be, you see, the time taken.
No compromise on the quality, no compromise on the spiritual upliftment of the person.
Exactly.
That is the sole goal of Bhagwan and the sole goal of Sathya Sai organization.
Another very interesting analogy, if we were to talk in the context of this. Again, Dr. John Hinchcliffe asked Swami, many youths are taking to drugs.
Mm.
Many youth are. See, that's because that's instant relief, instant high. And Swami said, no, that is very wrong for a spiritual aspirant.
Mm.
For a spiritual aspirant, that is very wrong because it puts you in a state which is not true. It puts you in a state which, you know, you get addicted to and you're not depending on God. You're not depending on your self-confidence. You're depending on drug. So that is absolutely not right. Mm-hmm. So again, here the same issue of means versus ends comes
yes,
into play.
Yes, yeah. In fact, as you mentioned that Swami wants every person to be that ideal. And in fact, Bhagwan says in one of those discourses that the primary goal of all of the Sathya Sai organization is to promote that brotherhood of man and fatherhood of God, where you're talking about the unity, no? Greatness
yeah.
lies in diffusing the differences and laying the foundation for universal love. I mean,
mm-hmm.
That is the goal of the Sathya Sai organization. The truth has to be recognized. What is the truth? The truth is that there is only one God. He is omnipresent. There is only one language, the language of the heart. There is only one caste, the caste of humanity. There is only one religion, the religion of love. This truth has to be recognized as the essence of all religions and lived by. Through that, determined, we have put that determined effort to strive for the welfare of society. I mean, Swami said this is the aim of the Sathya Sai organizations. And here, when Bhagwan is talking about the great men of today, the so-called great men of today, Swami is saying that they give a lot of public talks and they do promotions, but they are only that is only for self-aggrandizement.
Correct.
You must demonstrate the ideals in action. As you just mentioned, Swami wanted that the movement, the Sathya Sai movement, should spread only by every person becoming a living example of Swami's message.
Mm.
There's no point giving talks and preaching if you're not practicing. In fact, that reminds me of a very moving story from the life of one disciple of Buddha.
Okay.
So his name was Subhuti, one of the chief disciples of Buddha. And so he was someone who was waiting to propagate Buddha's message and Buddha's principle to society. So on one occasion he prostrated before Buddha and he asked his permission to go and spread his message. So Buddha said, get up, Subhuti. The thing is, unless one experiences me within, he's not eligible to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, it is not really easy to become a speaker. Even when you speak beautiful words, people will criticize you and they will condemn you, and such kind of people will be plenty. Then Subhuti said, dear Lord, I am experiencing your presence within me.
Mm-hmm.
And by your grace, I am sure I can deliver your ideals to the people to make them happy. You just please give me the permission to do it. And Buddha remained silent and didn't say anything. And Subhuti sat there with his head bowed down. And Buddha went away for giving a talk to the devotees and other monks. And after a very long time, Buddha returned. And Subhuti was still there with his head bowed down, waiting for Buddha. And Buddha said, Subhuti, you are still here? I thought you had got my answer from my silence. And Subhuti says, dear Lord, I am not wise enough to know your silence. And I think nobody is that wise to understand your silence.
Mm-hmm.
And then Buddha smiled and he sat down assuming his lotus posture. And then he asked, okay, tell me, Subhuti, if you go to a village to speak and people choose not to listen to you, what will you do?
Right.
So he said, I will not mind, my Lord, for I will just remind myself that at least they are not calling me names or they are not accusing me.
Mm-hmm.
So that is fine if they don't listen to me. At least they are allowing me to speak. And then Buddha asks, okay, what if they do that? What if they call you names and what if they start accusing you? And then he says, I will still smile because I will just remind myself that, you know, this is a small price to pay for spreading your message. And they can do even worse things like abusing me. They are not doing that. They are not abusing me physically. So that is okay if they are calling me names and if they are condemning me. No, then Buddha goes a step further. Okay, what if they hurt you? What if they throw stones at you? And he says, that will also be okay. Oh, Master, I will just remind myself that, you know, at least they have not pinned me down. They have not stabbed me. At least they are only just hurting me. That is okay. And then Buddha says, what if they do that also?
My God.
What if they pin you down and they stab you? And Subhuti says, Lord, I will take heart thinking that it's okay. They have not killed me, no. That is fine. And now Buddha says, what if they kill you? And then comes Subhuti's reply. He says, dear Lord, I will be most happy, Tathagata. I will be most happy. And that is the only time he raised his head. Till now he was speaking, his head bowed down. He says, I will be most happy. And he, looking at the beautiful form of Buddha, with tears in his eyes, he says, other than dying by your feet, I cannot think of a better nirvana than dying spreading your message. And Buddha then raises Subhuti and embraces him and he says, you are fit to be a speaker. What I told you in the morning was just to test your patience. You have that spiritual attitude required to take on a great cause.
Beautiful.
In fact, when that reminds, in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, he who having devotion to me explains this supreme knowledge to my devotees will reach me alone, no doubt. And compared to that person, no one else among humans performs actions which are dear to me, nor will there be anyone else on this earth dearer to me than that person who takes that task of sharing my supreme knowledge with my devotees. I think that is such a beautiful thing. But to do that, you have to have the kind of adherence to the master's principles, that kind of fortitude, that kind of steadiness of faith, like Subuddhi.
Absolutely. In fact, just taking this same idea a little bit further, there was a question, I think, which came to Radio Sai, as to how do you deal with people who are talking against Swami?
Yes.
So I think a few of us actually tried to search for passages from Swami's discourses where he's advising us on how we should deal with criticism on Swami. And the beauty is, we didn't find any. Because Swami has kind of indirectly dealt with the topic by saying, if anybody says there is no God, you can say, I have my God, you have your belief, I have my God. That is the maximum to which Swami has gone.
Yes.
If somebody is criticizing Swami, how do you deal with it? So when we try to search, we didn't find any passages where Swami is talking about that. On the other hand, Swami is challenging the devotee. What do you know that you want to speak about me?
Yes. What do you know?
Swami is not bothered about what people are talking, negativity against him, criticizing him. He's bothered about you.
Yes. You are saying that you know me and you can
talk
about me.
You want to go and speak about me. My question to you is, what do you know about me? He says, your faith is not steady. You praise me and when things are going fine for you, and you blame me when things are not going fine for you. Your faith is not steady. What will you speak about me? What can you speak about me?
Wow.
Do you know me? So, you know, another incident which was narrated to, which was shared by one of the old students, he was saying he had a guru, a spiritual guru. And the thing is, that guru was narrating to them his story. Actually, at a very tender age, he got a very incurable disease. So this is somewhere in the north of India near Rajasthan area. And he got a very incurable disease because of which in those days they didn't have, access to medicines and other things. So the parents were totally taken aback and they were shocked. And they said, if because of this one child, the entire village is going to get infected, it's better to disown him. So they took him to the forest and left him there and returned.
Oh my God.
They just left him there and returned. Now, this child was helpless and, totally drained out and tired. And he just fell unconscious. And when he opened his eyes, he was inside a cave. And there was a Gauri Baba.
Oh.
A saint. A Gauri Baba is a very, orthodox kind of people, sages and
sadhaka.
Sadhaka who follow a particular type of worship and all that. So this Gauri Baba had lifted him and brought him to his cave. And, kind of gave him milk and gave him food and everything. And he said, how long you have been asleep? You are unconscious. For some 4 or 5 days, he was completely knocked off. He brought him back. And then he told him that this disease which you have encountered, which you have got, is not by accident. This is something which was given to you so that the world leaves you.
Oh.
Because that is not your path. Your path is a spiritual path. And you have to now train under me. So this is your destiny. You have to be trained under me. So you have been brought here. Then the young child, he didn't know anything. He said, okay. As long as you're going to feed me, yeah. I'll do anything. So rigorous training started. And went on for several years. 9 years, 10 years, 11 years, almost like 16 years of rigorous training. And the guru kind of poured his entire knowledge and trained the disciple to such a degree that the disciple had so many spiritual powers.
Oh, wow.
He had a lot of siddhi. He had acquired a lot of power. He could go and touch the lame and make them walk.
Oh.
He could go and touch the blind and give them eyesight. He could go and cure people.
Like 16 years continuous spiritual practice.
Spiritual practice. He had the power in his hands. He could do anything. And even possibly bring back someone from the dead. He even had that kind of a power. And after teaching him all these things and giving him, kind of endowing him with all these powers, the Shishya, the disciple, asked the Guru. The Guru said, no, my life's purpose is over. I have passed on everything to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now the disciple asks, what am I supposed to do with this? What is my duty? Why have you taught me all this? What should I be doing?
Hmm.
Should I just keep going from village to village and cure people? Like how Swami said, if yes. The government called him, in one wave of his hand, the entire world could acknowledge that here is Bhagwan who has come.
Hmm.
But that will only have a lot of, it will be like a big announcement and a spectacular thing.
Yes.
But it will not be deep. It will not have a lasting impact. So like that, this person was confused. The disciple was confused. He said, should I just go to the villages and start curing people? Then the Guru smiled and said, that is the easiest thing to do. So when Swami comes for darshan and gives vibhuti and touches the lame, we think that is the most, that's why he says, meeku aascharyam naaku sahajam.
Yes.
For you it is very spectacular and it's unbelievable. For me it is natural. This is the simplest, my miracles are the simplest of things for which I have come. So the Guru told the disciple, that is the easiest thing. Of course, you will know, you will be given the knowledge of whom to cure, when to cure, what to cure, why you are curing. All those things you will know. Then he said, then what is the purpose? Why have you taught me? He said, the whole purpose of my 16 years of training is so that you can transform one person in your life.
Oh, wow.
If you can touch one heart, and if you can turn that one heart Godward, if you can inspire that one heart to take to the good path, the entire training is worth it.
Amazing.
So he says, transformation is so difficult to bring about.
And you can never underestimate the power of one good soul.
One good soul
can wipe out the evils done by hundreds and millions.
Exactly. Like how Swami is saying in this paragraph, what is the task of this holy men? These holy men, they should spread this universal love. They should remove differences from society.
Yes.
They should, spread with these dose of sama, dana, satya.
Swami says, many times even I used to think of this, that the government spends so much time in trying to seek solutions for, say, as Bhagwan says, the soil pollution, water pollution, air pollution, and all these, you're using technologies, you're using the knowledge of science, you're using people's IQ to find solutions for all these problems.
Mm.
But no one is spending time to think what is the root of the problem and what can we do to that.
Exactly.
What can we do so that these problems will not arise itself? See, people have got these diseases and then you're trying to find solutions for these diseases, but no one is seriously thinking why this disease came. And this disease came because of some sort of lack of self-control in the person. Here Swami is talking about self-control.
Exactly.
At some level, because there is lack of discipline, there is lack of self-control, you get all these diseases. But no, you don't find any institutional setup to address this problem. And that's what Swami is saying. If only, just like you have doctors to treat the maladies of the physical body, if only we had institutions, if only we had governments to think of finding and setting up an institutional mechanism so that people become more spiritual, people easily realize the frailties of the temporariness and the frailties of the worldly existence and going after the desires and so on.
Mm.
then the world, Swami says, would have been a much, much better place. That's how this whole segment begins. Mm. Swami says, if we would have had spiritual centers set up by holy personages in different places who are experts in treating the maladies of worldly life, then we would have not had diseases like ignorance, untruth, immorality, and ego. And exactly. I think that is, well, when you look at this segment, Swami is continuously telling us that, yes, if you are someone on the spiritual path, if you are someone who is a Sai devotee, then you become my message. I mean, that is a silent message, that is that you become my message. And then Swami also says that, you know, your greatness will lie as a Sai devotee only if you know how to diffuse the differences. If only you can walk the path of universal love. Mm. In fact, other day I was just reading this little story. So there was this young monk who one day asked his master. He said, "Master, I'm trying to know God by practicing different techniques and I'm not successful. Can you teach me what I have to do?"
Okay.
So the master then walked up to a rose bush.
Mm-hmm.
And he handed that young monk this rose bud. And he told him to open it without tearing off any of the petals.
Uh-huh.
So the young monk proceeded to try to unfold that rose and trying to keep every petal intact. And he realized that, you know, it is really impossible to do that. And now when the monk noticed the way the young monk was struggling to unfold without tearing it, then the master said, "See, you're strong. Your hands are strong. You're very intelligent, but you're not able to unfold the flower easily."
Mm.
The secret of opening the flower lies only with God.
Mm.
He opens each petal at the right time. And then the master says, the blossoming of this flower has to happen from within. You cannot do it externally.
Correct.
The rosebud cannot be opened externally. That blossoming has to happen from within. See, it has to, you cannot know God by external means. That's what Swami is telling. You have to be. You cannot just preach. You have to be. Doing will not reveal. You have to just be. You have to keep your inner calmness. You have to be patient. Do your sadhana and wait for that blossoming to happen. And then you will not only be in peace, you will also be in a position to share that peace. And that is what will lead to your joy, your happiness. In fact, the other day I was reading this little anecdote. So there was this car which is going ahead very slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person was coming behind, you know, he started honking because the vehicle in the front is moving so slowly and, you know, he lost his cool and he started honking frantically. And when he came near the car, then he saw a small sticker on that car's rear window and it was written there, "Physically challenged, please be patient."
Mm-hmm.
And that changed everything. So this person now, he just became very calm, he slowed down, and in fact now he became so protective of that car, you know, that he was constantly seeing that nobody else's touches that car, and you know, he sort of was so concerned that nothing untoward should happen to that vehicle. So what changed in just 2 seconds was this label on that car which said, "Physically challenged, please be patient." And you know, this really sets you thinking, like, if there are these labels on other persons, every time we are, you know, talking to someone, every time we are in the world, you know, if there is this label on that other person, lost my job, fighting cancer, I'm alone, recently divorced, going through a bad phase.
Me too. Hashtag me too.
Me too, yeah. Yeah. You know, financially broken.
Mm.
Suppose, you know, there are these stickers on different people, then what would our attitude be? And I think That is something for us to reflect upon, because every time we lose our cool, every time we lose our patience, and that is when, you know, all these other evils come out. That is when you lose the sense of unity with the other person. And so Swami says only the sense of unity will happen only when you give up selfishness.
Correct.
And selfishness will happen only when you start developing the quality of universal love, feeling for the other person. And I think that, you know, these are little ways by which we can practice daily in our life, that, you know, every other person who is there in front of us has a sticker. So let us remember that there is a sticker, and so that let us stick to our patience, let us stick to our path of following Bhagwan's teachings. Wow, I think the time is running out. We have to bring this session to a close, but I think there is so much more that really needs to be conveyed here. And dear listeners, please feel free to share your thoughts and your feedback. As always, please join us in this discussion, join with us in this journey to unravel the beauty of Bhagwan's teachings and his message. As always, you can write to us by emailing to listener@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp us. Our number is 9393258258. Once again, 9393258258. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for this opportunity to share these beautiful moments with all of you. Praying to Bhagwan to guide us, to be with us, and to fill us with that universal love so that our lives become his message. We bring the session to a close. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.